are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm actually out sitting in my backyard right now. It's a beautiful day.
It is gorgeous, and then tomorrow you'll probably be inside because the temperatures are going to be in the low 90s. But you know what? It's better than snow, right?
Hey, absolutely. I'll be in working on some experiments on tomorrow. I'll be in the lab tomorrow.
Well, we're going to come back around to that here in just a few moments, but I want to begin with this. Last week, there was a Forbes article discussing Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine, which is heading into its Phase 3 trial of 30,000 individuals in early July. What do we know about this particular vaccine?
It's a kind of cool vaccine because it's made with RNA and not DNA. And DNA is, what I like to say is part of your permanent record. And RNA is not. RNA is easily erased. So it produces a temporary response once you put it into cells. They make the protein, and then hopefully you make an immune response to the protein that your cells are making, and hopefully that's good enough. And the nice thing about it is that there's a lot of ways you can adapt it. So if you don't like it, you can really do some quick tweaking on it, make it a little bit differently. So it's a very different kind of a vaccine. And, I've been working on vaccines my entire adult life, and, you got to hope it works. It not all do. A lot of them don't. But, if we get a vaccine, that would be fantastic.
So the fact that it's in this phase three of the trial, right, and they're looking at experimenting on 30,000 individuals in July, I mean, should we get excited about the fact that it's this far along? And if it gets past this next phase here, what's the next step?
The next step is a much more expanded trial. So if it gets to the third phase, we may be ready to get towards manufacturing and getting it produced in a lot and large quantities to deliver. And that'd be fantastic. This is very encouraging kind of stuff. But I always want to warn people that sometimes, even when you get this high, you can, something could blow up and it might not work. You might find something that you're not really seeing with low numbers. So you got to be always careful about it. But I'm optimistic.
And I tell you what, it sounds like this could certainly be a game changer. Being optimistic is something I think we should all hang on to right now with all the madness that's been going on here the last couple of months. And I want to transition into something else that you explained in your most recent co-video a couple of days ago. Can you expand a little bit further on your findings in your most recent study on genetics and certain genes and their resistance to COVID-19?
Well, I got really interested in this whole subject. My students we've been focusing on chromosome number 3, and of course there's 46 chromosomes, or 23 pairs actually of chromosomes, or 22 pairs of chromosomes, and then X and Y. So there's chromosome number 3 is where a lot of the genes that we are focused on, they have to do with the immune responses and they are receptors for the immune system talking to each other. And it is kind of one of those stories where, we know that one of the disease, that cytokine storm that occurs, that the people who get really sick have this huge wave of immunochemicals that can be kind of nasty and it can kind of hurt you. So we think that maybe there might be something going on there. At least there was a couple papers out that say that might be the case. There was also earlier report, this is not the remdesivir drug, but there was another drug that was being tried that had some promise that actually targets one of the genes that we work on. And there is about 20% of the population has a reduced amount of this protein on the surface of their T cells, and that somehow that might be involved. This is something that we've been working on. We've been working on the way people respond to different pathogens for years now, it stands to make sense that there's going to be variations in the human population that would protect us from this as well. So that's kind of an interesting finding, and I look forward to seeing more details on what others have found and on this area of the third chromosome.
A couple of days ago, you also discussed the importance of quantitative antibody testing. Can you elaborate on that, on the importance of quantitative antibody testing?
Well, the quantitative means the amount, you know, how much. If you got a little bit of antibody, if you got a lot of antibody against this. And we don't exactly know much about what you need to be protected. We still don't know that yet. But if we know that, hey, your antibodies are, you have, yes, you're positive for antibodies against COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, but you don't have enough to actually protect you against another infection. And we'd also like to know, by the way, how sustainable this is. Is this something that we're going to have to worry about every season, every two seasons? How long do they last? So if you have a quantitative antibody test, that's going to give you the opportunity to measure the immune response and also to measure the persistence. So I could look at an individual over a couple weeks time and see a couple months, a couple years, and see if their antibodies stay enough to be protective. I mean, the hope is that there is. I mean, the hope is that you could get lifelong immunity. I'm not sure that's going to be the case, but that's what we're looking for here.
Again, we're being joined on the hotline by Dr. Harry Kestler, Lorain County Community College microbiology professor and virus expert. We mentioned we come back around to the work that you've been doing with your students and in the lab. You and your students have been working on a study on masks and their effectiveness. Are you able to share a little bit about what you guys have found so far and the difference in masks?
We've got much more to come on this story, but I'll give you a little bit of a teaser for what we've uncovered so far. As you could imagine, there are differences in masks. And basically, we did a study looking at bacteria. Now, bacteria are much bigger than viruses. So if bacteria can get through a mask, then you know a virus can get through a mask. And what we discovered was that lots of bacteria get blocked on the inside of the mask, because we really showed that, but a significant number get through depending on the mask. And of course, if it's a cloth mask, some get through. A cloth mask with a filter is much better. And of course, there's the N95 mask, which we've also been testing, much more gets through. We also are working on an experiment to look at the question of me mask, you mask. In other words, if I can prevent lots and lots of virus from getting out of me with one mask, and if you have a mask on as well, the double protection, we want to be able to show you kind of visually and graphically that two masks are better than one. Your mask and my mask work together. I protect myself and you, and you protect yourself and me with your mask. So those are some of the things that we're working on right now. It isn't feasible for everybody to walk around, nor would you want to walk around with an N95 mask. They're quite a bit to wear, and they're a little bit uncomfortable to wear. You have to wear them really tight. So we're trying to find what is the best thing. But definitely masks matter. That I can tell you for sure, that walking around with a mask is a good thing for you and for others.
Masks make a big difference. There's no question about that, and certainly we look forward to finding out a little bit more about what you guys found in your mask study, and we'll look for that in the next co-video in the coming days as well. One more thing I want to throw at you here, Dr. Kestler. I know that a little bit of this has been tossed out there recently, the 80-20 rule. And for those that maybe aren't as familiar about what that might be, can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit? And do you think that the 80-20 rule is something that applies with this pandemic here in the States?
Well, if my understanding of the 80-20 rule is, and quite frankly, I didn't hear much about this before today, but is that it is, you know, a small effect can produce something huge. Well, let me just tell you a little bit of something about what we've done by sheltering in place. We probably could have done a lot more if we sheltered down just a week earlier, but, you know, it is what it is. But the sheltering in place has really done a tremendous job at protecting a lot of infections. We, like, think maybe 60 million infections have been avoided by sheltering in place. So that is a good thing, and a lot more deaths would have ensued as a result of that. The fact of the matter is that when you talk about the reproduction of viruses, you know, if you can stop one person, you've actually prevented three other people. If it's got an R0 of 3, you've protected three people from getting exposed and three people beyond that. So, you know, by controlling things that way, you can achieve a greater effect, a synergistic effect, if you will, which is that synergy is that a more than additive kind of effect that you get from a certain action. And that's kind of what we, you know, I have to tell you, the sheltering in place that we have done up to now has worked. It has kept the hospitals in good shape. We are going to start seeing more cases, but we have also, you know, we can handle more cases at this point. So what we did was hard. It was really, really hard. And I hope we don't have to do it again. But it really was beneficial.
Well, I've got to ask you this on the whole, because you've offered so many terrific details here over the last 10 or 15 minutes. I guess on the surface, how do you feel about where we are with this whole process today, as opposed to, say, where we were maybe about 5 or 6 weeks ago in late April?
Oh, it's much better. We are sitting in a very good place right now. We know a lot more. If we were to have a big rush of cases right now, even we would be in better shape, because, you know, all the people, the clinicians and the surgeons and the doctors in the hospitals have been learning a lot about patients on the fly. They've been learning on the fly how to treat patients better and to get more survival. Like one of the things you have to think about is, you know, if you have somebody who's having a cytokine storm, what you want to do is suppress them. But you got to remember, this is an infectious disease, so you don't want to suppress them all the way, their immune system down all the way, because if you do that, they succumb to the disease. So we have been, we are learning how to play that game, how to actually control a patient and have a good outcome, and have somebody go home and have one of those happy moments like you see Some Good Things TV show, if you want, or that the video Some Good Things by John Krasinski. You will see lots of those happy moments when people leave the hospital more and more, and that is in fact really good news.
Great, great stuff. Well, Dr. Kessler, we always enjoy having you on. So much terrific insight. We always appreciate the time. We encourage everybody listening to check out your co-videos as well, which you have up every couple of days on the Lorain County Community College YouTube page. Dr. Kessler, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Again, that's Dr. Harry Kessler, Lorain County Community College microbiology professor and virus expert. Look, I've been telling you for the last 15 minutes or so,